From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Welcome to the News OK Pet Show. I'm Carrie Coppernall.
And I'm Brian Dean.
And we're joined today by Laura Bataro, mammal curator extraordinaire from the Oklahoma City Zoo. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Before we chat with Laura, let's have some news. Brian, do you?
Okay, well, the first story I have is, it's kind of interesting. They've done, we all talk about being either a dog person or a cat person. I mm-hmm. imagine, Carrie, since you have two dogs, you probably consider yourself a dog person. Mm-hmm. Laura,
I have three cats at home, so I'm definitely a cat
person.
I would cat lady yet.
I would also consider myself a dog person. Well, apparently there were some researchers from University of Texas at Austin who wanted to find out what being a dog or cat person says about your personality. Mm-hmm. So they did some questionnaires, and they had people respond. And based on those responses, dog people scored significantly higher on extroversion, agreeableness, and conscientiousness. While the cat people scored better on neuroticism and openness than dog people.
And Laura is going to fight someone right now.
Neuroticism.
That just means you guys have cleaner houses than we do.
Well, that's true. I will tell you that I have a very clean house.
See,
but I've also been a dog person, so I could be both.
And I guess it kind of makes sense when you think about how the two different types of pets operate. I mean, with cats, are more independent, so people tend to be more, kind of independent themselves, whereas with the dog people, dogs tend to be kind of extroverted, so maybe that makes sense. But it's not, they said that clearly this is not like a definitive part of who you are, but if you knew nothing else about someone other than they're a dog person or a cat person, you could definitely use these findings to try to make some of those inferences. And it was, by the way, regardless of gender. So both men and women scored the same.
We've now deduced that Laura has the cleanest house. And knowing where the two of us live, I'm going to just go ahead and say probably yes.
Right.
Probably by a mile.
And we both like to talk more, probably.
Yeah.
We're more extroverted.
Yeah.
Probably.
I don't know about that.
We'll have a contest later.
I'll tell you, I have cats because I am a little bit more independent now.
Yeah.
In that I'm not going to school. But when I was going to school, I felt like cats were better because I didn't have enough time to spend with a dog. But I've had dogs for many years as well.
Well, and you also are in charge of lots of both.
Yeah.
At the zoo.
So cats are a little bit easier to deal with.
So Laura is
when you
a
get home.
Cat person, a dog person, and like maybe a rhino person.
Lots of other types of
rate apes.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, so moving on to our next story. This one not much scientific here, but think of it what you will. This comes to us from Coachella, California, where the owner of Lynx Gentlemen's Club arrived early one morning to find blood and broken glass. And when he checked a security video, he found that a goat had broken into his strip club. Yes.
That was his second thought.
The 150-pound goat smashed its way into this, gets on its hind legs, rams into the quarter-inch thick glass, breaks through one door, then starts ramming the other door before trotting inside. And apparently the best they can figure out, the goat may have seen his reflection and decided to just butt heads.
Or he was just morally opposed to the strip club. He did not approve.
I don't know what the goat quite was. He cost $2,000 in damage.
Wow.
But the owner apparently is going to get the reflective doors covered with paper until he can get a security fence. So the next time a goat tries to butt his way in, he'll have to get through an iron gate as well.
You are probably exactly right. He saw his reflection, thought it was another goat. It's probably a male goat, I'm thinking. And he thought he needed to take care of his territory.
Uh-huh. The weirdest part is they don't even know where the goat came from because there's not even any nearby people who have goats. So they don't know if it got loose from a trailer at a nearby truck stop or what. But somehow a goat just kind of wandered in into the area.
It happens.
And then started causing destruction.
Well, speaking of other mammals, let's talk about the lions. They're gone.
They are, and we're sad, but we're also happy because, I'm sure that everybody sort of remembers the story of the cubs.
Tell us about this.
Well, we had four lion cubs in one day. Ironically, and coincidentally, as far as we know, both females who were half-sisters mm-hmm. gave birth within 48 hours of each other, and both had some issues mm-hmm. with the birth, namely that they had large male cubs stuck in their birth canal. Mm-hmm. So those animals did not survive, but mm-hmm. Out of seven cubs, we were able to revive four mm-hmm. and then had the wonderful opportunity of hand-rearing them, only because the females had had C-sections and they simply were just too sore to nurse their right. cubs. Otherwise, we probably would have tried to give them back. But anyway, so we raised them until they were 4 months old, mm-hmm. and then they became physically
large
in their development,
big enough to
becoming
hurt
me. Large. They you know, very sharp claws, uh-huh. big teeth. All right. the reasons why you should not have these animals as pets.
Yeah.
And when we felt that there was a compromise to keeper safety, then we went to what we called strictly protected contact. So mm-hmm. no free contact with them at all.
Yeah.
But it was really cool because we had hand-reared them, that they were very comfortable with us. Mm-hmm. And that's great for animals that are going to be on exhibit with mm-hmm, a lot of mm-hmm. people around. So they don't show some of the stress levels that perhaps other animals show, especially wild-caught animals.
Yeah.
So it's great to have these hand-reared animals. And we learned from them that if we could get our hands on other babies that are born, even if they're being hand-raised,
right.
it takes some of that anxiety away from them
right.
over time. So the move was very easy. Mm-hmm. When you work with hand-reared animals, it's much easier to train. So they've been trained from the time that they were babies to go into a crate, to step onto a scale.
I was going to ask
crate
about
trained,
that.
Just like my dog.
Like how, I mean, I have a friend who has a cat, and she talks about the terror of getting the cat in the crate to go to the vet. And I just imagine that times about, like, you know, 100 pounds.
Well, the reason that she probably has that problem, and my cats are the same way. Uh-huh. And it's because I don't take the time to put them in a crate at other times other than going to the
right.
vet, which
right.
now they associate with
something
an
awful.
Adversive
right.
you know, situation. The cubs, and I keep calling them cubs, they turned 2 years old. They're not cubs anymore. Mm-hmm. They're youngsters. They're adolescent lions, anywhere from 300 to a little over if you're Xerxes, who is the male. Mm-hmm. But the way that we train at the zoo is we don't put an animal in a crate when we need them to be in the crate. We spend a lot of time conditioning them to crates or what we call restraint devices for injections and things like mm-hmm. that. We do a lot of training that encourages the animals to volunteer with what we're asking them to do. Mm-hmm. They're not forced to do anything mm-hmm. unless it's a health emergency that we need to get our hands on them. But other than that, we try to train as much as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. So they were trained to go into the crates. And they loaded up very nicely yesterday morning, and a gentleman by the name of Rowdy picked them up, mm-hmm. and he just called me, as a matter of fact, before I walked into the studio, to tell me that they had arrived safely, they unloaded, they rode beautifully, they unloaded beautifully, and they're in their new home.
Wow. By the way, I think if you move lions for a living, then you have to be named Rowdy. I do have a question. Where do you find a crate to hold a two-year-old lion? Do they
Walmart?
Sell those at PetSmart? Or?
No, but there are actually companies that specialize in manufacturing containers for animals.
I assume we're not talking like a bigger version of the plastic crate you might put in your house. What do these things look like? Are
they're
just
metal,
gigantic?
They're metal crates. They're big enough so that animals can comfortably stand up and turn around. I'll give you an example of another metal crate that I had the opportunity of helping design, and that was a rhino. So even when you're looking at an animal
that's become
that
a shipping
big,
container.
I know. Yeah, but we go according to what we call the IATA requirements, which are the airline requirements if you're shipping an animal. So we never know if we're going to ship them by air or ship them by land. So we always try to make sure that the crates are manufactured to those standards. Uh-huh. So there are companies that specialize in crates like that, but we also have a local manufacturer who helps us with some of our crates as well.
So tell me about the age, they're being adolescents. Is that a good, like, did that make it easier or harder, or did it matter when it came to shipping? Like, would it be easier or harder for cubs or adults? Or
I don't think it matters mm-hmm. As long as you go through the same conditioning process. We're in the process right now of moving Grevy Zebra out of the zoo as well, mm-hmm. and we're just thrilled because he is stepping up onto the trailer. And so it doesn't matter what species you're working with or how old they are, as long as they're capable of physically doing what you're asking them to do, and you can get them to volunteer to do it so that they're not afraid, mm-hmm. it works great.
Is it difficult, obviously in the wild, you know, if you, especially males, when they get of age, they're going to probably leave the pride anyway. because of the competition factor. But is it difficult either for the other lions or obviously for the keepers who've raised and been with these animals? I mean, if there's got to be some, you know, some separation issues. How hard is that at this point?
I always say that if you're not attached to the animals that you work with in some way, on some level, you probably shouldn't be doing what we do in the zoo. So yeah, you know, there were a few tears shed yesterday. Like I said, we've had them for 2 years. We watched them grow up. We raised them for the first 4 months. Mm-hmm. We saw them go through all the baby stages, and I don't care what animal it is. They're just like humans.
It's adorable.
You know, they just really, the stages are the same. They open their eyes. They see the first thing. They run to you when you're scared. Then they want to play. And then they get big enough where, okay, you shouldn't be doing this anymore.
Do the other lions notice that they're gone? I mean, is that noticeable?
Well, interesting that you bring that up. As much as the keepers were sad to see them go, I have to say two things. First of all, this was always the plan.
Right.
We participate in the species survival plan for African lions. Some of the subspecies are critically endangered in the wild. And so these cubs are probably destined to become parents themselves at some time. Well, our original thought when they were born was to try and introduce them back to the parents and form this big pride. Mm-hmm. We chose not to do that because we were then told by the SSP, or the Species Survival Plan, that they were going to be moving to another facility. And so we thought, well, why go through all of that trouble with a chance that somebody could get hurt?
Right.
Let's just work them as two different prides.
Okay.
So when you guys come out to the zoo over the last 6 months or so, you either saw the parents out, which is Aslan and his girls, or you saw the cubs out. But you never saw the two groups together.
Okay.
And just recently, Xerxes is getting old enough to start competing. And so he and Aslan were not getting along very well just across the hallway.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys have been in that building, but it's very acoustic. And so when both animals start roaring,
goodness, it's a
little unnerving.
So it's got to be like one of those primal. I cannot even imagine being in there with two lions growling back and forth at each other. Like, that's got to be the stuff of nightmares almost.
I know, no kidding. Please let the locks hold, please.
Oh, and they will. But I do have a funny story. We had, when the cubs were born, we had a cameraman come in when we opened it up to the press. And I warned him when he was standing in front of Aslan's bedroom. I said, he can get loud. And so this poor gentleman was right up against, not against the cage, because we have parameters, we have proximities where you mm-hmm. can, you know, get close to an animal or not get close. So, of course, not very close, but close enough to where Aslan just looked at him, charged the gate, and just let out this roar. And this gentleman
peed his pants.
Yes.
He just turned and hauled down the hallway. And we tried not to laugh because I understand where it was coming from.
Yeah.
But it was fairly funny.
That's what you get. Well, I have one more question. How common is it? I mean, this is four lions is a lot of lions. How common is it exceptional is it for them to be able to stay all together like this?
I don't think it's very common. I think in most cases, animals are probably moved around as individuals. Mm-hmm. What's really wonderful for the youngsters is that they do get to stay together mm-hmm. as a pride and as a family. They're still young, so there's still a lot of interaction between them. There won't be any competition mm-hmm. unless another male is introduced to the pride, and that won't happen. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma City actually has ownership of two of the animals, but another zoo actually has ownership of the other two.
Oh, okay.
So we donated our animals to El Paso. The other zoo chose to put them on loan, and that means that they can do breeding loans mm-hmm. over the years mm-hmm. as it becomes necessary to get new blood into the gene pool.
Well, and obviously you're not going to inbreed, so if you do want to make them parents
exactly.
later, they'll have to be split up to
yes.
for that purpose.
Correct.
Right.
Well, excellent. Well, thanks for coming, Laura. We always appreciate you stopping by. And thank you all for listening. And everyone go out and take care of your pets.